This year, I am focused on saving and investing, but I still want to do things like travel. NerdWallet lets you compare top travel credit cards side by side to maximize your spending, some even offering 10 times points on your spending, which means you could end up with a free flight or maybe a better hotel room.
So what could future you do with smarter financial decisions? Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. Homes.com knows that when it comes to home shopping, it's never just about the house or condo. It's about the home. And what makes a home is more than just the house or property. It's the location and neighborhood. If you have kids, it's also schools, nearby parks, and transportation options. That's why Homes.com goes above and beyond to bring home shoppers the in-depth information they need to find the right home. And when I say in-depth, I'm talking deep.
Each listing features comprehensive information about the neighborhood, complete with a video guide. They also have details about local schools with test scores, state rankings, and student-to-teacher ratio. They even have an agent directory with the sales history of each agent. So when it comes to finding a home, not just a house, this is everything you need to know all in one place. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hello and welcome to Happier, a podcast about, you guessed it, how to be happier. This week we'll talk about the right time to give advice and about the perpetual happiness headache of email etiquette. I'm Gretchen Rubin, a writer who studies happiness, good habits, and human nature. I'm in New York City, and with me is my sister Elizabeth Kraft, who is one of my most reliable and good-natured habits guinea pigs.
That's me, Elizabeth Kraft, a TV writer and producer living in LA, and you're just the person I need today, Gretch, because now that the pilot I was working on is done, I really want to get back to my good habits, so you're the person to get me there.
Ooh, bring it on.
Meanwhile, as I try to get back into my good eating, good sleeping, etc., in episode 62, we talked about, you know, getting rid of excessive stuff. And like the example we used was soy sauce packets, you know, not having too much of those little things accumulate. And we'd asked for a more catchy title than what we had for it, which was something like, you know, don't gather too much stuff or something like that.
I think it was stop accumulating excessive amounts of stuff, which is okay, not catchy.
We got some great suggestions about what to call that. Two of our favorites were stop stockpiling, which is simple and has a nice alliteration. And the other one that we loved was send the rat packing.
Yeah. And we got some great suggestions about what to do about some of the common stockpiling problems. I mentioned that I'm now doing these Facebook Live videos. And so we talked about some of these on Facebook Live. And here's some that are great. Lily had a great term that comes from the knitting world. It's an acronym about excessive pack ratting. It's when you have stash acquisitioned beyond life expectancy, sable. And so, yes, if you have more ketchup than you could possibly use in one lifetime, then you need to get rid of it. And I thought this was a great suggestion from Jessica, which was that when she's ordering food or getting food, she says she wants food only to tell the people not to send, you know, the extra napkins, the salt and pepper, the soy sauce, the ketchup, all that. And I thought that was a really, really good suggestion, too.
Also, I really liked the person who suggested that you bring extra ketchup packets or soy sauce to work and make a little basket at work, because often at work, people are always searching for those kinds of items.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Gretch, on the other side of this, Deanna wrote in talking about how her family often has a problem with collecting excessive amounts of stuff, including lint.
What are they going to do with their lint?
She says her husband uses it to make fire starters. in the pile of egg cartons they have. And she uses it to make her paper, which is a craft she does, stronger. She says, but with the amount of laundry we do, we don't need it in a bag. So, yeah, when you're saving your lint, you're really into saving. So
and actually using it. I mean, that's like well done.
True. I guess, yeah, using it, then more power to you.
And Tori points out that Whole Foods will accept collected rubber bands, which is very cool.
Right. You mentioned that you have too many rubber bands from around your newspaper come around your newspapers.
Yeah. And Camilla says that that the post office will take them, and you can put them in a mailbox in a clear plastic bag or leave them out for the mail carrier, which is fascinating. So like they could make good use of rubber bands. So that was interesting. So great examples of how to stop stockpiling, which is a little bit of a tongue twister, but a great phrase. Now, Elizabeth, this week our Try This at Home is only give advice when asked.
Yes, this is a great one. I think this is a challenge for most of us. I think almost everybody loves giving unsolicited advice.
Absolutely.
I know I do.
And we've all been on the receiving end of giving a lot of unsolicited advice when you sort of feel attacked and picked on and criticized and nagged to death. And you're like, no one asked you to weigh in here. why am I being subjected to all this unsolicited advice?
Yeah. And the thing about, you know, giving someone advice when they haven't asked is it can have the opposite effect of what you want it to have. Because I think I know I do, quickly can get defensive.
Yes.
And so if you're piling on the advice, they might just, to spite you, do the opposite of what you want them to do.
Right. Or give in altogether. Like you think of that often with parents giving children advice when they're doing some kind of sporting activity, you know, and they're, oh, pull it back on the backswing, or you need to leave with your foot. And finally, the child's just like, you know what? It's not fun. Like with you yammering in my ear the whole time, I see that often just kind of in daily life where a child loses interest because there's just so much advice. It feels tedious.
They just shut down.
Yeah.
Because it feels like, a parent might be offering advice, trying to be helpful, but it makes the child feel like they can't do anything right. And so they just don't want to try at all. I'm sure I've done that, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
I've no doubt I've done that.
I'm always like to Eliza, can I read your paper before you hand it in?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that sometimes when people are complaining or you know, talking about a problem that they have or a challenge that they're facing, we often perceive it as, oh, they want my advice. But in fact, they don't want advice. They just want somebody to listen to them. And this ties back to that idea that you and I have talked about before, which is to acknowledge the reality of other people's feelings. Like you can just acknowledge how they feel without feeling like you have to ride to the rescue with a bunch of unsolicited advice.
Oh, yeah, that is big. I think it's meant well, but it comes off as sometimes even downplaying what they're feeling, because you're like, oh, well, you can solve that by doing this.
Yes.
And really the person just wants to vent.
Right. Or patronizing. Or intrusive, or kind of giving you homework too. You should do this. You should do that. And you're just like, oh, well, I don't want to do those things. And, you know, but Elizabeth, I think that you and I are fortunate in that we have a pretty good example in our life because our parents, they're not 100%, but I would say they are very good about only giving advice when asked, which as a parent, I realize now how hard that is. I appreciate it more now that I have children myself, because I feel like they really do wait until they're asked before they give advice.
Yeah. Even I think sometimes that's really hard, especially for mom.
Yeah.
But they absolutely refrain from giving advice. I will say they almost don't need to give advice because I feel like their voices are in our heads like 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
Like, I think mom and dad would be shocked to know how much we take, like, them into account in our decision-making process.
Even unconsciously.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'll have to not do what I think mom and dad would want me to do. I have to, that's a whole effort, you know. That doesn't just happen naturally.
Well, and Jamie's kind of the same way with his parents, and he knows that about me, and I know that about him, and we joke about it because there's that great scene in Star Wars, A New Hope, you know, the real Star Wars, and maybe you remember this scene, Elizabeth. It's when Luke Skywalker and Obi-Wan Kenobi are about to go into Mos Eisley, and they've been stopped by a stormtrooper who's asking them for their identification.
Let me see your identification.
You don't need to see his identification.
We don't need to see his identification.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
These aren't the droids we're looking for.
He can go about his business.
Jamie and I say, you know, our parents are like, you know, the Force. These aren't the droids you're looking for. And we're like, hey, that's right. These aren't the droids we're looking for. Because they don't even need to say it. Like, as you say, it's so powerful for us.
Now, meanwhile, when you get good advice, of course, it can be life-changing.
Yes.
And that's the beauty of good advice.
Yes. It's like that thing about how information wants to be free or information wants to be very expensive, because the right information at the right time can change your life. And it's really true that the right advice, when you're ready to hear it, can be invaluable, can be life-changing. And I think that's part of why people want to give advice, because we all know that sometimes advice can be so helpful. And it's such a great feeling when you feel like you've given someone a tool or a piece of information or a piece of advice that's been so valuable. But then you've got to remember that that's a small percentage of the time.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, just the other day, I called Dad at his office to get his advice about something, and he gave me great advice. And I felt so much better afterward.
Yeah.
And I think I slept better that night. It was like, it was such a relief to get good advice.
Well, you know, and I often preface it in exactly that way, like with Jamie or with other people in my life. Like, I will say, I am asking you for advice in this situation, so that they know that I am telling them something because I'm asking for their advice. And I think implicit in that is, like, if I'm not telling you that I'm asking for advice, maybe I'm not asking for advice. But I think it's good for people to have a clear signal as to kind of what their role is. Like, I remember once you were telling us about how you said to Adam, I just want you to listen to this. And so then he knew kind of, okay, these are the expectations around this conversation. And I think sometimes that can really help people feel like they're being a good listener, being good at engaging with you, because they know what you want. It's when they don't know what you want and they do the wrong thing and then you get annoyed, that's when, you know, it gets tiresome for everyone.
This is such a huge topic. I mean, you'll remember when Eliza was our special guest in episode 30, we asked listeners for advice that they would give their 16-year-old selves.
Yes.
And we got such amazing responses that for our next very special episode, episode 70, we want you listeners to tell us, what is the best advice you have gotten? What was that perfect piece of advice at the perfect time that changed your life or changed your perspective? We want to shine a spotlight on it.
Yeah, it could be a health, work, parenting, relationships, anything. Because I think sometimes you can even benefit from other people's advice. You know, it's like somebody gave you that piece of advice, but hey, that advice works for me. And it's fascinating to see the advice that people give. So let us know, what is the best advice you've ever gotten? We're really excited to see what everybody has heard. And for this one, we really want to hear your voice as you tell the story. So send us a voicemail at 774-277-9336. And because that's hard to remember, this is easier. 77-HAPPY-336. We're very excited to hear your responses. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and free. And, you know, Elizabeth, I now work with a team, and hiring the right people is so important. It's maybe the most important thing. And LinkedIn makes the process of identifying and hiring people easy and intuitive. I know that when I've been hiring for my team, it's hard to find quality candidates to interview. And LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn.
Post your job for free at linkedin.com/Gretchen. That's linkedin.com/Gretchen to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
So, Alyssa, this happiness stumbling block, I think you described the problem of online passwords as the problem of our time. And I think the problems related to email etiquette are even a bigger problem of our time. I think that all of the issues related to email are something that every single day is something that I struggle with.
Yeah, I mean, relationships have been torn apart, Gretchen, through bad email etiquette.
Oh, 100%. People have been fired. People have lost their jobs. They've lost their reputation. And people keep saying, like, email is going away. Email is not going away. Email is here to stay. Like, we need to figure out how to grapple with the problems of email.
Who said email's going away?
Oh, you know, people, these prognosticators, they're like, oh, teens only use text and Snapchat, so email's dying. I'm like, yeah, well, wait till they get a job and they need to send an attachment, or they need to, like, go back and see what somebody said like a week ago on this conversation. It's like, it's they're not fungible. They each do something different. And so anyway, I think that email is here to stay for at least a while. And I think it falls into two problems. One is writing the right email, like how do you craft the perfect email to what you want to do? And second is, how do you not send the email that is going to blow up in your face?
Yes,
so there's like the positive and the negative.
Yeah, a lot of what one stumbling block I encounter is when someone you really care about emails you and you haven't talked to them for a while, and you really want to send a full update back to them, a chatty, newsy, how are you email that you want to spend time on. And then because you want to spend time on it, you actually never write it and you never email back.
Right. Yes. And I've seen that often with myself. And sometimes when I get from readers and listeners, is that the one that is like, that is the most thoughtful and that has conjured up the biggest response in me is the one that I answer very late and sometimes not at all, because it's so big.
Right.
Whereas a quick like thanks is easy, but when it's harder. But so here's a tip that I've figured out for myself that I will propose to you. Sometimes when you get like that really heartfelt email and you sort of feel like you need to respond in kind, but it's hard to do it, I often say to myself, one of the ways that I can show how much this email has meant to me is by responding right away. Because like suddenness of response kind of signals like, ooh, wow, this hit me hard. And so sometimes now I'm saying to myself, well, maybe I can't respond at length, but I can respond immediately.
That's a great idea. I'm going to do that. And that's easy. That's something to implement easily.
Now, what about the bad emails?
The bad emails, those are dangerous. I mean, I know a lot of people have a policy of, not sending out angry emails for an hour or until the next day, which I think is a good policy. I always say you shouldn't send an email while your heart is still pounding from anger or your stomach is churning.
Yes.
Wait for calm. Now, I'm lucky because I have Sarah. You know, I'd say a lot of emails that are angry tend to be work related.
Yeah.
At least in my industry. and so Sarah and I will read each other's emails to say, like, is the tone okay? Is the content okay?
Yeah.
If it's at all questionable, you know.
That's smart.
Oh, and then the other thing, and I don't know if this is in your life, but I think a lot of people deal with this in terms of email etiquette, is who is CC'd and even in what order are they listed on the CC list or on the, you know, mail list.
I know this can become like something that you can take hours to craft. And I had this experience when I in an earlier job that I had, where there was a lot of like politics involved. And so, you know, like you'd write this email that would be like very carefully thought through about who gets it and who doesn't get it. And then my boss would email reply, he would reply all and then add in all the people that you had very specifically not included. So not only would they see everything that you didn't necessarily want them to see, but they would see that you had originally tried to keep them off of the CC list. Uh-huh. And so as a consequence, I quickly learned, like, never email this boss anything that's not just like the meeting is confirmed at 3 p.m. or whatever, because he really, really had it really wasn't helpful. The way that
maybe that was his goal, by the way.
Oh, yeah. No,
to keep people from emailing him.
Oh, no, I think his goal was to kind of blow things up. He was a guy who really thrived on conflict and really wanted people to sort of be in it all the time. And so I think he did it. I don't think it was accidental. I think it was a deliberate strategy on his part. But it was just the strategy that would like get me in trouble. You know, like I understood what he was trying to do. But I'm like, well, I don't like that does not work for me in this situation. So, again, it's like people have different agendas. And that can come up in email where there's a lot of people involved.
Equally annoying is the person who never replies all. They just reply to the person.
Yeah.
So then it's on you to then dispense the information to all the people who were originally on the email. That drives me nuts.
But then there's the opposite problem of people who reply all when only one person needs a piece of information. Like,
true.
You know, like, can you come to this meeting, blah, blah time? It's like, not everybody needs to know. It's just the person who's organizing the meeting. So anyway, but we don't want this to turn into a simple rant about email. But it's a happiness stumbling block because there's a lot of pitfalls. It takes time. It takes mental energy. The stakes feel high because a bad email can lead to a very big problem. And, you know, it's one of the problems of our age.
Yeah. I mean, I think a good rule of thumb is when in doubt, don't.
Yes.
And Gretchen, we won't even get into, in terms of email etiquette, whether you should sign off best, sincerely, XO, hugs, love.
Cheers, ciao.
Cheers. That's a rabbit hole we won't fall into today.
And that's a problem for another episode. Now let's tackle a listener question.
Gretch, this week our question comes from Sarah.
Hi, ladies. This is Sarah. I live outside of Philadelphia. I'm a mom of two little kids, and I have a burning question that I'm calling you with here as I am recovering from a vacation hangover. Any tips from getting back into the groove quickly after returning from a really wonderful time away from home? Thanks, ladies, and I love the show. Bye.
So, Gretchen, this is something I totally suffer from. I relate to Sarah completely because I get vacation hangovers. I mean, I get this from anything, like if I've worked a long time hangover, vacation hangover, stressful time hangover. I think it is really hard to get back into the groove of normal life after being outside of it.
Well, see, this is one of these places where I feel like I'm kind of a killjoy because I actually really usually like getting back in routine. I find it kind of a relief to get back into my ordinary day after I've been away. So I don't have this so much, I have to say.
Well, see, the problem is like you get up at the same time, even if you're on vacation. So many of your habits stay the same, whereas I do think most of us really let a lot of our good habits fall away when we're on vacation.
And so that's what the hangover is. It's like, oh, everything's been loosened up and now I have to get back into kind of the constraints of my everyday life.
Yeah. And it feels more oppressive than it did before you left because then you were just in it. You were doing it. Now that you've seen, you know, had this little oasis, to get back into those things feels very difficult.
Right. Right. Well, one thing I think that helps that I like, even though I kind of like getting back into routine, and I think it helps people who are have what you're talking about, kind of the getting back into the shackles of everyday life, is something that I learned from my in-laws. Because, Elizabeth, when you and I were growing up, like going on vacation, our parents' philosophy is like you cram every possible second out of a vacation. And so it would go to the very last minute. And my in-laws have this philosophy where you always try to get back a day early. So like you would come back on Saturday, not Sunday. And so you would have one day fewer of vacation, but then you have a day when you arrive. And this feels very luxurious. I feel like it really helps to have a transition period like that, like to unpack, to do laundry, to go through the mail, to like get everything kind of up and running in a leisurely way. Whereas if you're arriving from the airport at 8 p.m. and then you're going into work at 8 a.m. the next day, that itself becomes very stressful, and that probably exacerbates the problem of like, oh, here I had all this pleasure and leisure and reading on the beach, and now I'm like thrust back into my everyday life, and it just feels so onerous.
Totally. And then the other thing I think that can help is to have something to look forward to when you get back.
Yeah.
So if you plan that, I guess, before the trip, like dinner with friends on Wednesday night or something, then it's you're forward looking, not just looking backward at your vacation.
Right. Exactly. That's a great idea. And here's something about vacation specifically. I don't know about you, but one of the things that is really that I find stressful about vacations and I keep meaning to fix and I have not done it, but now this Sarah's question is making me think of it, is to have a way of dealing with the photos. Because, you know, usually you want to like make a little book or, you know, do something with your vacation photos. And I still, like, a lot of times I delay that for a long time and then it kind of weighs on my mind and it's something to worry about. I think I should try to have that be part of my like unpacking set of things, is to do something with those vacation photos.
That's a good idea. And then it's sort of like you're acknowledging the trip and it's a ritual.
Yeah, it'd be fun because you're like reviewing it. And then part of what would make it fun to get back is like, oh, you're going to order your little album of your digital photos, or you're going to make this, or maybe you're going to print one out, or you're going to make a, I don't know, whatever people do with their, you know, make, put it on your phone or make a montage for Facebook or whatever you would do. That's kind of like a finishing touch, or a way to memorialize what happened, and maybe try to fold that into the last stages of the vacation. Because I just postpone it. And then it feels very disconnected from the vacation. It's just like another thing on my to-do list.
That's a great idea.
And one thing the happiness research shows is that people really are happier when they take regular vacations, when they take breaks from their ordinary life. And so it's important to plan those vacations. You may get the vacation hangover, but really you're very wise to take a vacation.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors, big and small, and when we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe place to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. Gretchen, when I started my career, therapy really helped me work through all of my stresses so that I was able to concentrate at work and do a good job.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GretchenRubin today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GretchenRubin.
So, Gretch, this week you are up with a happiness demerit.
I am. Now, this is something that happened just the other night, and I definitely should get a demerit for this. I got into bed and I was lying down, putting my head on the pillow, and I realized that I had not meaningfully connected with anyone in my family all night long. I don't know where my head was, but I was like reading a book that I enjoyed. I had a lot in my mind and I was just sort of sleepwalking through the motions. It wasn't like I was, you know, like
being crabby.
I hadn't locked myself in a closet or something, but I just felt like as I was lying down in bed, and like Jamie was climbing into bed next to me, I was like, have I talked to you in like a week? I mean, I felt like I hadn't. And then I thought about Eliza and Eleanor, and it was like I was talking to them or whatever I was doing, but my mind was a million miles away. And it wasn't like I had some huge pressing thing on my mind that I was so distracted, because it was just everyday life. It was just, I was just sort of spaced out and disconnected. And I didn't notice, I wasn't mindful enough of where of my internal state to realize like, hey, wake up, you know, slap myself on the cheeks and say, okay, like pay attention here. Until I went to bed, I hadn't even noticed. Because I think if I had noticed, I would have like made an effort to break through.
Because this goes exactly to why you started your policy of warm hellos and goodbyes,
yes,
right? Is so that you would make sure to be like, oh, yeah, I love these people. I need to connect.
Yes.
But I guess sometimes I get it. Sometimes you just zone out.
Yeah, and I was going through the motions. Like, I'm sure I gave hugs and kisses and said, "How was your day?" But it was just like, you know, you say, "How was your day?" And then you're not listening when they answer. Or, you know, you give a hug and you're like checking your watch over their head or whatever. Yeah. So anyway, it was a good lesson for me, though, because that's a very unsatisfying way to deal with your family. And so next time, like, you know, pay attention, be present, feel the love.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. How about you? Gold star.
Well, I want to give a gold star to, you know, Jack's kindergarten. We had the cutest thing the other day, and I just thought it was such a good idea. So they're all learning to read, of course. And we had a little program called the Young Authors Program. And over the course of the school year, as they've started to learn to read and write, all of the kids wrote three different things. They wrote a short personal narrative about something that happened to them, what they call a persuasion poster, which was a little poster about something they want more of in their life,
ooh,
and then a how-to guide. And they had all of these different pieces of writing in an envelope. And all of the parents came on Friday morning, and we sat around the grounds at the school, and each parent's child started with them and read for them what they had written, which was great. And then the child would go and read their stuff to another parent, and somebody else's kid would come and read to you. So it was just this really nice thing where your child is getting to get out there and express himself or herself and connect with other parents. And we were getting to connect with other kids.
Yeah.
And you didn't do everyone. You know, it was just sort of whoever happened to be around and done at the right time for half an hour or so. But it was just this great program because the kids were so proud,
yeah,
and so happy to share their work. And you really got to know the kids because they were saying personal things in all of these pieces.
Right.
You know, my favorite of Jack's was his how to cook steak, which I don't even know how to cook steak. So it was interesting to hear that.
What did he want more of?
Oh, he wanted more play dates. Yes. And his personal narrative was about the time he broke his arm in a tragic hugging accident. So anyway, just a gold star to them for that. To me, was really thinking outside the box about a kind of activity. You know, it wasn't just them singing a song or something. And it made everyone feel good. And then afterward, we had this great breakfast, and the kids all got certificates and pencils saying that they were young authors. And it was just a feel-good morning all around.
Well, and I got a little bit of pleasure of that because for your update, you sent a photo of Jack holding his certificate very proudly. And so I got the fun of getting to see the photo.
Absolutely.
And that's it for this episode of Happier. Remember to try this at home. Give advice only when it's asked for. And speaking of advice, call in. Give us your best advice you've ever gotten for our very special episode 70. That's 774-277-9336. That's 77-HAPPY-336.
Thanks to our producer, Henry Malofsky, who one listener referred to as the third sister. Also, thanks to Andy Bowers and Laura Mayer of Panoply. Gretchen's on Twitter at Gretchen Rubin, and I'm at Elizabeth Kraft. Our email address is podcast@GretchenRubin.com.
If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend. And if you rate or review us in iTunes, that's a big help for the show. If you want to get my free newsletter where I have highlights from the podcast, the blog, the Facebook page, anything, just text me at 66866. And in the message box, enter the word happier. You'll get a text back that asks you for your email address. If you type that in, you'll be subscribed to the newsletter.
Until next week, I'm Elizabeth Kraft.
And I'm Gretchen Rubin. Thanks for joining us. Onward and upward.
Gretch, I know from my own experience that baby making is not always simple. There is a lack of knowledge surrounding how to get pregnant. And when you want to conceive, there can be a lack of understanding and resources. Frida Fertility is the only one-stop shop that makes it easier to make a baby with a set of solutions for everything from reproductive health to ovulation tracking to conception aid.
Frida is simplifying the journey to parenthood with products that help you go from trying to making a baby. Frida products are innovative, easy to use, and accessible, from ovulation prediction to at-home insemination kits. This is baby making simplified. Find Frida Fertility on Amazon, at Target, and select CVS stores near you. That's Frida Fertility, F-R-I-D-A, Frida Fertility.